The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
The Aryan Alternative. News and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
I believe that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up. This is Jeff Beck. I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
After the opening monologue, I welcome you to join the show by calling 609-910-1418. The Skype username to call is SSKIIT.
Hello. Anyway, I'm happy to be with you tonight, live. This is Friday night, January 20th. This is the 9th edition of The Truth Is No Defense. I'm hoping to make Friday nights the regular night for the show. We'll just have to wait and see. There's a lot happening in my life, and it's hard to get everything scheduled. Anyway, I've got a lot to talk about in tonight's show, so let's jump right in. Something is terribly wrong. So wrong, so monumental, so comprehensive is the scope of the crisis. It's hard to concisely describe it. It's hard to get your hands around it. Perhaps if I refer to a movie most of us have seen, this might help to clarify the problem. Do you recall the plot of the movie The Invasion of the Body Snatchers? In this movie, an alien vegetative life form attaches itself to humans who are asleep. And while the victim sleeps, this plant material makes an exact copy of the victim. And when the reproduction is finished, the original, that is, the authentic person, is killed, and the replicant assumes his identity. Of course, there is a small band of aware people that are attempting to forestall their doom by not sleeping and at the same time concealing their knowledge that they're awake from the ever-growing number of replicant imposters. The plot of this movie does describe the crisis we confront, which is that something deeply illegitimate has replaced the legitimate on a vast civilizational scale. Still, I think many will not understand what I'm getting at. I'd like to use a more personal example, if you will indulge me. My family has lived in this region of the Midwest, which includes Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas, since the 1880s. Beginning with my great-grandfather, to my own father, all the men in my paternal line worked in the construction industry, building bridges, schools, post offices, roads. I really can't say what all they built, though I know my grandfather and my father worked together on the ASB bridge, which spans the Missouri River in Kansas City. Sometimes I must travel to downtown Kansas City a city which, as my family, including my cousins and uncles, mainly on my maternal side, though, were chased out of in the 1960s and 1970s by black youths. These youths, or thugs, really, were inserted into the public schools that my ancestors had built. They were inserted into these schools by court-ordered desegregation rulings. In the subsequent decades, the crime problem has grown mightily. For the year 2005, the murder count was 127. In the 1950s, when the blacks were kept under control, when there was no desegregation, and the Mexicans were in Mexico, the rate must have been near to zero. So today I reluctantly traveled to the city my family built. And it wasn't just my family, it was our family, if you want to use those terms, our racial family. And substitute your own city, what I'm talking about, the city my family's from. Anyway, when I do visit this town, I sometimes visit the ASB Bridge or motor around the few old buildings which have stone facades and ornate details and grand entrances in a style that just isn't built anymore. Other times I like to visit the bluffs that rise above the Missouri River to gaze out over the vast prairie, a view which has remained unchanged for centuries. I've often wondered, had my ancestors visited these buildings, perhaps motoring as I had just done, or entering those grand entrances, had they too enjoyed the view of the prairie high atop the bluff? If by some miracle my ancestors could return to life, and if they could join me in a tour of the Midwest, they would surely recognize these streets and buildings and landscapes. But those who inhabit the buildings and walk the streets would be as alien to them as Martians. I don't think they could understand what America has become, no matter what buildings and landscapes they might recognize. They could not recognize the terms of contemporary political debate, the diversity slogans, the multicultural slogans, the laws, the affirmative action, the Patriot Act. They couldn't recognize the nation whose infrastructure they had built. Betrayal might be foremost in their minds. As they watch betrayal, yes, betrayal, as they would watch the children of Asia and Africa and the Middle East traverse the roads and bridges which they had built. This substitution effect, or the inversion, it really is kind of a satanic inversion, really, isn't it? The satanic inversion of the natural order of this last few centuries is an earth-shaking event that few seem to grasp. Kevin MacDonald, the author of The Culture of Critique, who some refer to as the John Locke of our time, is also from the Midwest. Perhaps he has a family history similar to mine. I suppose millions do. I suppose many listening right now have a similar family history. Anyway, there is a section in The Culture of Critique, a book I greatly recommend, that is unlike the rest of the book, a section that seems to echo my alienation and my lament the loss of my birthright in the nation my fathers built. In this final chapter entitled Whither Judaism and the West, MacDonald writes, "It is the descendants of the WASP who settled the West and the South who, by and large, did the most to lay out the infrastructure of this country, quite often suffering educational and professional regression as they tamed the wilderness, built the towns, the roads, and the schools. Today, they had the least to show for these contributions. And if one would care to check a map, They are from the areas now evincing the greatest resistance to government. The war goes on, but it is easy to see who is losing. End quote. You know, I'm convinced that no man of our past, if he returned today, could ever make sense of the world of 2006. And this is not some declaration of progress or the wonders of technology, the computer, or any such nonsense like this. No, it's about human quality. It's a comment on the demographics and degeneracy. It is a comment upon the degeneration of human quality. Could our imaginary ancestor, resurrected from the past, cope with the mongrelization of his race? Could he cope with the swelling population of blacks and Asiatics and mestizos on the soil that has been his own? You know, there is a web or a thread of tradition that at one time we were all connected to. T.S. Eliot, in his 1922 essay, Tradition and the Individual Talent. By the way, T.S. Eliot is a mind of the first rate. And one of the reasons he's not discussed today is because he's literate and he criticized the Jews. But anyway, moving on with his essay here. Tradition and the Individual Talent, which is available online. He considered the obligation an artist has to the past and the artist's role in honoring and furthering the traditions of the past. He noticed this thread or web that had united him with Dostoevsky, and Dostoevsky with Shakespeare, and Shakespeare with the medieval bards, and the bards with Virgil, and Virgil with Homer, and Homer with Sophocles, and on, Eliot wrote, quote, "The historical sense involves a perception not only of the pastness of the past, but of its presence. The historical sense compels a man to write not merely with his own generation in his bones, but with a feeling that the whole of the literature of Europe, from Homer, and within it the whole of literature of his own country, has a simultaneous existence and composes a simultaneous order." No artist of any art has his complete meaning alone. His significance, his appreciation, is the appreciation of his relation to the dead artists. What happened when a new work of art is created is something that happens simultaneously to all the works of art that preceded it. Again, you get this idea when you read this of the connection we have with our dead, with our ancestors. I think that connection has been severed in some way. I think we're living in some sort of new reality. And it's pretty scary to think about. I can't be sure, of course, but I think Eliot might also agree that this continuity of tradition, the connection to the dead of centuries past that he spoke of, has now been severed. You know, what else can explain why a Jew like Frank Gehry, who mocks and belittles traditional forms, creating monstrosities like the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain, is exalted with the title of architect? What else can explain why we ennoble incoherent paint drippings like Jackson Pollock's? We call them paintings. And what else can explain why we label the illiterate yelps of blacks as music? It's not music. Whether it be the mad visions of Frank Gehry or the vomit-stained mattress canvases of Jackson Pollock, these things are not elements in Eliot's thread of tradition. In fact, they are alien to our race, every bit as foreign as the vegetative invaders in the movie The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. What passes for art today is not an augmentation of existing forms and traditions, which Eliot had described, but a revolutionary break with the past. Geary, Pollock, Snoop Dogg deserve all the respect accorded to a pack of feral dogs devouring the carcass of a deer alongside an interstate. But something else more profound has occurred, beyond just sort of a criticism of art. Something deeply revolutionary. You know, when we think of revolutions, most imagine statues pulled down, an assassinated dictator like Ceausescu in Romania a few years ago, or maybe a guillotined monarch, or fighting in the capital city, often for control of a radio station or an armory. This is the prototypical style of revolution modeled on the French Revolution of 1798. There, a monarch was executed and a radical government took its place, ousting the royal form of government. The radicalism went very deep. The calendar was redesigned and measuring systems were replaced and churches were rechristened as temples of reason. This is one type of revolution, the type most of us are familiar with. But there is another type of revolution where instead of overthrowing the government, the culture is overthrown. This is the type of revolution which overthrew the American regime, founded in 1776, and created a new state, one born in the 1960s and 70s. Although the preparation for this revolution had been building since the year 1900, when Jews first arrived here in this country in large numbers. Anyway, that's getting ahead of the question. Unlike the French Revolution of 1798, in our revolution of the 60s and 70s, churches were not renamed, the universities were not burned down, the calendar wasn't refashioned. No, everything looks the same as it was before, just as our ancestors, if they had gazed on the city, would recognize it as a city they knew. No, it's not looks, but what is said and what is taught in these churches and schools, and what is done and who is in them, that's what's been changed. After a decade or so of radical change, the new regime, which overthrew the old regime, consolidated itself in the 1980s and 90s, and is now firmly in control. A regime so confident that it can now promote conservatism, well, of a sort. It's not the conservatism of the old regime of 1776, but a new form of conservatism, one in which the radicalism of the 60s and 70s is now institutionalized and regulated by law in American life. The new conservatism is nothing more than an affirmation of the previous generation's radicalism. That is why people like David Horowitz, for instance, call themselves conservatives, because they won. Their revolution succeeded, and now they want to preserve it. You know, this is why conservatism is utter folly. And you should never use that word. Maybe after we win, we can talk about conservatism. Anyway, the technique the revolutionaries used to overthrow the culture was to seize control of the institutions that inform and teach the public, and especially the young, about the nation, slowly subverting the traditions and accepted wisdom of generations. Some, like, well, Revelo Oliver, recognized what was happening. But most, even those that objected, eventually fell in line with the new order. And most people really are cowards like that. Let's look at an example of how this new order, how this new regime works in practice. The 14th Amendment was first ratified in 1868, under questionable circumstances, I might add. But anyway, the 14th Amendment was understood as an amendment guaranteeing citizenship to blacks, which they did not have before the Civil War. Anyway, the 14th Amendment said that blacks would be entitled to certain due process in the courts of each state. Of course, that process was the right of each state to decide. For most of this amendment's history, both segregation and the so-called Jim Crow laws were not considered in violation of the 14th Amendment. Furthermore, it was never the intention of the 14th Amendment to guarantee citizenship rights to any piece of third world filth that could simply cross the border and poop out a baby. Nor could it have been imagined that that same piece of filth could be entitled to taxpayer-funded welfare benefits. But that is exactly what the Supreme Court discovered in 1999. In the Sains versus Roe case. Look it up for yourself. S-A-E-N-Z versus Roe. And let me tell you exactly why this happened. It is because our culture was overthrown. It is because the legal organs of the United States have been subverted. The Jews have remade American legal jurisprudence in accordance with their worldview. Not our worldview, their worldview. This infiltration began in the 1960s when Jews were let into our elite universities, especially law schools, numbers. Before that time, quotas were in place, restricting the number of Jews admitted. Once inside, they did what the Jews always have done, subvert. Today, the Jews have seized the commanding heights. That's a term from the Soviet Union, by the way. They have seized the commanding heights in elite law schools and are using their power to subvert our morality as it has been expressed in the legal body. Okay, so who are these Jews subverting our culture? Well, let me name names. First, there is Georgetown University Law School Dean T. Alexander Aleinikoff, who said, quote, diversity will not only be tolerated, but celebrated. Mr. Aleinikoff also served as Executive Associate Commissioner with the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. That's the country that lets these third world types in here by the millions. Anyways, a side note, the INS has now been rolled into the Department of Homeland Security, which is also headed by another Jew, Michael Chertoff. You see a pattern here? The list of Jews ruling our law school doesn't stop with Aleinikoff, but continues with Judith Resnick at Yale Law, George Cohen, University of Virginia Law, Michael J. Klarman, University of Virginia Law, Dina Hurwitz, University of Virginia Law, Risa Goluboff, University of Virginia Law, Susan Rose Ackerman, Yale Law. Some listening tonight, though I doubt very few, might ask, hey, why do these Jews do this? Why do they subvert? And you know, this is a good question. Why do the Jews use their ethnic connections and intelligence to subvert a nation rather than to strengthen it? You know, as other European groups, even though Jews are not European, but as other European groups have done, like the Huguenots and English, German, Italian. Why are they different? Why don't they use their intelligence and ethnic connections to strengthen our nation? Well, that's really not a subject of tonight's broadcast, but I'll share a brief clip by William Pierce, and I hope it answers your question. Okay, Stan, can you roll Pierce clip one? And it should be coming up shortly. That's the Pierce clip number one.
The Jews, through their entire recorded history, have lived as a minority among other people. That's their typical modus vivendi, not living among themselves in a Jewish society, but living as a small minority, usually a rich and powerful minority, in a non-Jewish society. Israel today is an exception to this pattern, but Israel is an anomaly. Something which has existed for only 50 years out of the last 2,000 years. And even today, it encompasses only a small minority of the world's Jews. Most of them live in the so-called diaspora as members of a Jewish minority in the midst of a Gentile society. When the Jews approach a healthy, homogeneous Gentile society with the aim of infiltrating it, they are looked upon as outsiders, as aliens, and regarded with suspicion, and often with hostility if their reputation has preceded them. Facing such suspicion, the Jews find it very difficult to gain power or influence so that they can exploit the society. Their way of dealing with this obstacle is to undermine the solidarity of the Gentile society, to destroy its homogeneity, to attack its morality and its traditions, to encourage alienation among its young people. They do everything they can to make the society more diverse, more multicultural, more cosmopolitan, more rootless, more atomized. This is a slow process, often continuing for several generations. But as it proceeds, the society's barriers against the Jews crumble. Ultimately, it allows the Jews to control and then plunder the society, to suck it dry before moving on to another Gentile society and beginning a similar process anew.
Okay. I'd like to replay a brief segment from that clip, just 10 seconds. Because it clearly tells what has happened and why things are so broken. It starts with the subversion process. Could you roll that clip too, Sam? Okay. It's very short. And it really sums up what we just said.
This is a slow process, often continuing for several generations. But as it proceeds, the society's barriers against the Jews crumble. Ultimately, it allows the Jews to control and then plunder the society, to suck it dry before moving on to another Gentile society and beginning a similar process anew.
Look, folks, that's what's happening. That's why things are so broken today. It's because we're it's like an orange. And what do? When you suck the juice out of an orange, you throw away the rind. And after we fight all the Jews' wars, and after all the money's gone, well, we get thrown away. Anyway, excuse me. Had to put the cough button on. Now that we have an understanding of the revolutionary process, and that which has occurred, we have to ask ourselves, what do we do? It seems there can only be one objective, to overthrow the revolution. If this is our goal, then conservatism, it seems to me, is the stupidest mode of political action that we might take. By definition, a conservative's loyalty is to the regime, its institutions and its customs. But we have just discovered our institutions have been remade and seized by others. And if they cannot be recaptured, then they must be destroyed before they finish the job of killing us. When fighting a war, it might be useful to capture an enemy's ammo and weaponry. But if it cannot be captured, then it must be destroyed, so that it cannot be used to kill one's fellow soldiers. This is the position we are in now. The universities, the schools, the media, their weapons being used against us. To allow them to continue firing upon us is folly. And if we cannot retake them, they must be obliterated, or we will be obliterated. Anyway, in closing night, a few thoughts. In closing with this monologue, most public officials who describe themselves as conservatives are opportunists, cashing in on a favorable label. And I'm thinking of politicians, and again, I'll name some names. No surprises here, really. Newt Gingrich, John Boehner, Tom DeLay, George W. Bush, and his father, for that matter. And I'll include Reagan in that, too. While a few, though, I can't think of any, are gullible and well-meaning people. But speaking of conservatism as a political philosophy, I think it is defective. Do you know this sport called fencing? In this sport, opponents wear a heavy white protective clothing and a fine wire face mask. They engage in sword play. Actually, their blades are not swords, but foils. Anyway, the sport of fencing reminds me of conservatism. Before the match, the fencer, announces, "On guard!" And when he strikes with the tip of his flimsy little foil, he announces, "Touché." While there might be much drama and style to such a competition, in the end, it's just a friendly match. The Jew, or his servant, the liberal, in contrast, doesn't use a foil. He uses a club to savagely beat his opponent into the ground. The conservatives really don't understand their opponents are not playing by any set of rules. And the conservatives will always lose against such an opponent. Well, why don't you go ahead and roll the break music, Stan, and we'll be right back after the break, and I'll take your calls. There's a few miscellaneous topics we can go into, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, I'll give the numbers after the break. Okay, be right back.
Problem is for the next generation. That's when the hurt's going to come about.
Let's kick that gringo in the ass. Come on. Let's go.
Hispanics, united.
They're taking over, and you're a racist pig if you resist.
Go back to Europe.
It's a war. I'm a painter. In the last 2 years, I started buying guns.
You know, make anything better by adding 30 million Mexicans to it, do you?
I'm not going to sit by on my couch and get fat while my country disappears.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to hear from the founder of the Minuteman Project?
Yeah! Okay, I'm gonna show you an armed vigilante right here.
These are our weapons.
The reforms in immigration that have completely altered this country have been the result, really, of elite sentiment. And frankly, ethnic interest group lobbying and so on.
The Democratic Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of voters. On the other side, the Republican Party.
sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of cheap labor.
There is absolutely no immigration law enforcement, which means we have no borders, which means we have no nation.
If we don't choose this border, again, as the line in the sand, to our own government, about what we, the people, demand and what we expect from the government, you know, you might as well just check it in and make sure there's something good on TV every night and stay out of their way. Don't do anything wrong, because you won't stand a chance.
The United States government has refused to effectively protect the southern border with Mexico for 40 years. Average American citizens are now banding together to stand up against a government they feel no longer represents their interests. October Sun Films presents The Line in the Sand, a documentary by Byron Jost. Visit OctoberSunFilms.com for more information.
The Aryan Alternative, news and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
Live White Chat.
24/7.
IRC or Java.
Pick your poison.
White racialist intercourse, live and online, VNN Live.
That's right, live chat for VNN, vnn.mine.nu, 1488/join/VNN. And for you Java folks, http://vnn.mine.nu/88/VNN Live. Antis need not apply.
Come get some.
Forget the phone number, Stan, if you can pop that on the screen so I can... Yeah, there it is. 609-910-1418. That's 609-910-1418. And, of course, I'll always mention Skype. This program you can download, S-K-Y-P-E. It's a no-brainer to install. You can talk to anybody you like with this. They have to have Skype on their computer. Connection's pretty good. The username, if you have Skype, to call to get on the show tonight, is SSKIIT. That's SSKIIT. And we'll convert you right in. And if there are any callers and the discussion gets interesting, I don't mind going over the hour mark. There's no reason why we can't do that. I'm really not much good at just sitting here and yammering without some sort of feedback from other people. I enjoyed the call that Frank called in a couple days ago when we were discussing various topics, and I really kind of enjoyed his take on things. I've been hearing him a little bit on the Paul Geller show over on Howl's Network. It's another show I like to listen to quite a bit. Anyway, Iran is in the news tonight, and I've got to know a few Iranians over time, and they really are different from Arabs, and they're different from Indians. They're different from Afghanis. These are the people that live around them. They have their own culture, and they're a pretty nationalistic bunch. I don't like them living in my country, let me be clear. I think one of the reasons why they have some pride in themselves being Iranian and in their nation is the fact that they don't have the Jews in their nation. The mullahs have pretty much kicked them out. And the Iranians I've talked to, they have expressed to me, and I think sincerely, a lot of them don't like the mullahs, but they love their country, and perhaps if they let the Jews back in, they'll learn to hate their country, like we have the dissension and the in our country today. And they'll have revolutions, and they'll have their culture overthrown, and they won't know who they are anymore, and they'll be alienated. Anyway, Iran is kind of interesting. The name comes from Aryan, by the way, and I suppose they consider themselves to be Aryan, and maybe they are a branch of the Aryan family. Maybe they're the branch of those people that 30,000 or more years ago, it is thought, moved out of the Black Sea area, just north of the Black Sea, I guess that would be southern Russia today, and spread out. I think they're responsible for the Aryan invasion of India. I guess they settled in Iran, and of course they moved into Europe. That's one theory for our origins. And maybe we do have a common origin with them. Anyway, as you know, there's been a lot of excitement in the news, and I check Yahoo News every day. And, you know, we have these two main stories about the Holocaust business over there. There's a conference. And then we also have the other business with the nuclear issue. And I want to be clear. I don't care if the Iranians have nuclear weapons, because I don't consider them to be a threat to me and to my interests. They may be a threat to the Jews' interests. They may be a threat to the military-industrial complex of the United States. But they aren't really a threat to me. That's not to say, you know, something might go terribly wrong where, you know, I get killed because of the conflict between the Jews and the Iranians and our government's being a lapdog, being the front man for the Jews in that region, that could cause some side effects. But, you know, I really don't care. I don't think the Iranian people really despise our freedoms, nor do the Iraqis or anyone else. If we would stop being the Jews' puppets, I think our problems with those people would disappear. Now, the question of them being in our land is another whole issue, and it's one that I am quite aggressive and quite hostile. And it's one in which they need to understand they can be our friend, but they can't live in our land. It's time to leave. But anyway, back to these folks. I've gotten to know quite a few of these people, and they're quite interesting, and their customs are different from Arab, and they were right next door, and they do consider themselves to be Aryan. And they are really suffering right now with drug addiction in their society. the production of heroin and other things that goes on in Afghanistan right now, that, of course, the Taliban, the people we overthrew, put an end to, but has now taken off again at record numbers because we need to keep the drug markets in Europe full, right? That's why the U.S. Army is over there, to protect the drug lords, to protect the warlords in Afghanistan so that they can make a profit and keep peace. That's what I think we're doing over there right now. That's the way the situation has degraded to. That's what peace and democracy is in Afghanistan. Anyway, Iran right now is a target for the Jews media. And if you look at the news.yahoo page, which I do about just about every day, there's some horror story on Iran. And it goes beyond the two big issues today, the Holocaust business and the nuclear weapons. There's always some story of a disease outbreak in Iran or the drug problem in Iran or some sort of social malady. On the Drudge report, you need to know that the Drudge is a Jew, too. You know, he had some sort of a woman in a veil who was on the cover of the report and something weird story about Iran the other day. And if you understand how these people work, they're creating an impression right now in the media of Iran, a bad, negative impression. And that's what all these other little stories are all about. They're coloring the news. And, of course, they could do it the other way around if it were needed. You know, I'm old enough to remember the Give a Damn Bomb Iran slogan in the 70s. Perhaps it's forgotten by some, but there was this Islamic revolution in the late 70s in Iran. And our, you know, I hate to speak this way, but our puppet government over there was overthrown. And the Iranian Revolution is a pretty complex event, but eventually this guy, Ayatollah Khomeini, took over and really initiated a reign of terror in his own country. And part of that terror campaign was this incident with the hostages that were kept in Iran. And, of course, this was a major news event. And this is what brought Ted Koppel to national prominence. He had this show every day where he would talk about, it was Nightline. Nightline was born out of this. Nightline became a media event because of the Iranian situation. And a lot of Americans were upset about this. And there is some legitimacy to their being upset. But what they didn't really know, and what I'm just beginning to understand now, is that the backdrop for this revolution in Iran in the 70s was Cold War politics. And the government of the United States, and I'm not sure of the Jewish involvement in it, but was screwing around in their country and screwing around with their politics. And this built up into a lot of aggravation and a lot of distortion, a lot of conflict in their society, and a revolution broke out. And we have ourselves to blame for a large degree. Now, I know we don't like to hear that, but we have ourselves to blame to a large degree for these mullahs over there in Iran today. And it's kind of ironic in a way, but that's the way it is. And Iran and North Korea and a few other countries, they're out of the orbit of the New World Order. The order that the bankers have established, the Jews have established, the international institutions. They're out of their grip. And that's one reason why there's so much pressure on these countries. is because they really aren't conforming. There was a time when China was out of their grip, but now China really has become a player in the New World Order. You see these companies like Yahoo and Google who are stepping in line, altering their search engines, altering their software, so that the sensibilities of the oligarchs that run that country are not offended. So their search engines don't turn up anything offensive to their rule. But they're coming online. These other countries are not. And there's tremendous pressure being put on them. Okay. We'll take a break from that subject. The phone number, 609-910-1418. That's 609-910-1418. And the Skype username is SSKIIT. That's SSKIIT. You know, there's an interesting map, if you want to look at a book by Chalmers Johnson about this subject of, it's called The Sorrows of Empire. And it talks a great deal about these military bases, and there's something like 700 military bases the United States maintains overseas. And we have a ring of them, all facing Iran and Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and I suppose Iraq now, fully militarized. It's like a cordon. It's like a fence with weaponry all pointed at them. And, of course, we're putting the pressure on Syria and upon North Korea, too, because we have to break these countries. Look, I don't like them. They're unsavory players. But this isn't about them being unsavory. This is about them yanking them into the New World Order. That's what's going on. And you know, this is really a break from our tradition. When I talked about our tradition tonight in the opening half hour, the legacy of our ancestors, at least in America for the last couple hundred years, our policy was not to interfere in the affairs of others, largely. There were lots of unfortunate counterexamples, but Washington said in his farewell address, avoid these entangling alliances with other powers and be friends to everybody. And you know, that's what really, as white nationalists, we ought to consider. We don't have to be belligerent to these people overseas. And there's no reason for us to be belligerent. I don't think they're naturally our enemy. When they get on our soil, when they interfere with our language, when they go after our women and they rape them, which they do here, that's a problem. We've got to deal with this problem. And if we don't deal with this problem, we're going to be pushed out of our own country and eliminated. But strong fences make good neighbors. And we can be a good neighbor to them. Say, I've got a song tonight I wanted to play. And it's by Merle Haggard. And I think he's kind of picked up on what's going on in the world today, and how we're really losing our freedom in this country while we're crusading for it overseas. Stan, can you roll this song?
Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for? Is it still our creed from shore to shore? After a soldier fights, should be reading his new rights. There's not that many to read.
I think we have Colonel Kurtz on the line, do we?
Hello, Kurtz. Mr. Beck.
Oh, hi.
How are you doing tonight?
Fine. Where's all our freedom
to,
going?
I don't know, but I just wanted to say I really enjoy your show, for one thing.
Thank you.
There's a little bit of a delay on the Skype system here, but anyway, I just wanted to say
yes.
I really look forward to your show, and I love listening in. Yeah, there's a little bit of a lag, I think, in the system right now.
Yes.
But I just wanted to say that
you
have an excellent show there. And I'm sorry, what?
Well, what's happening out in your area? Or the
well,
are the blacks
there's not a whole lot going on right now. no, they haven't run me out of my neighborhood. I've been here for at least 40 years, so. There's not much chance of that.
You know, I talked to Stan, and he's, I'm a Midwesterner, so everything on the East Coast is, you know, pretty much just the same thing in my mind. I'm sorry to back that way. But he lives in New Jersey somewhere, and, you know, he tells me that the Jews are just thick as flies out there. Is that the same thing where you are?
Well, there's not really too many identifiable Jews in this area, but you can feel their effects nonetheless. I'm sorry to hear that your family was run out of Kansas City. Those kinds of things, you know, going on in this country for at least 40 years.
That's right. And, you know, honestly, it's ethnic cleansing. It's not that they haven't made a good life for themselves out here in the suburbs, as millions of others have, but they didn't have to leave. They could have had their life, you know, you know, back there in the city, they could have enjoyed the city living that people in Europe have. They didn't have to be chased out. They could have enjoyed these beautiful buildings, and there's a reason why these cities were built where they were, is because they were nice spots. And, you know, like Kansas City is on a bluff. And there was a reason why, you know, Los Angeles is where it is, because it's right next to the ocean. It's real nice. And the damn Mexicans have the best property now. And the whites are out living in the desert.
You know, I understand that even in countries like Germany, even today, the cities are still, you know, a preferable place to live for whites. And they haven't been driven out as our whites have been driven out of the violent cities in the United States.
it's almost like the opposite there from what I have seen and heard. In France, these creeps, these Muslims, this black trash, they actually live out in the suburbs, and the whites have kept the city for themselves, like in Paris. But these invaders, they're all ringed around them, I guess in what we would call the suburbs. So where are your
anyway,
family
it's
from?
Another good show.
Okay.
Well,
I guess it's hard for us to.
My family is there's a little bit of a delay, so it's a little bit difficult communicating. But my family has been here for at least four or five generations in, I guess you'd call it Southern Maryland.
You're from Virginia, right? Maryland.
No, I'm in Maryland. Yeah.
Maryland. Yeah. You know, your family might not be that different from mine. They left the Virginia Maryland area in before the Civil War in the 1830s and 40s, and headed out west. And you know, your family might have been, you know, very similar to my family's history, except that they stayed in around that area. Anyway, Mr. Kurtz, I'm probably going to call the show to an end tonight because the lag is just so terrible. And we can talk
there's
again.
There's been a problem with buffering.
I welcome your call.
Show.
Oh, gosh.
Thank you very much. I look forward to listening
very,
to your show
very
again
sad to
next
hear.
Week.
Thank you very much. Okay, and that's it for the show tonight. And sorry about the technical difficulties. I guess that's one of the problems with going on Friday night. Okay, thank you very much, Stan. Roll the closing music. If you can hear it.